This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I remember when making choices about telephones was simple. Ma Bell was your only choice in phone companies. As for telephones, well, you could choose your color and whether to get a desk phone, a wall phone, or a princess. And now we have enough choices in telephones, answering machines, and long-distance carriers to drive us crazy. I think my guest will be of some help. Carl Opedal is the author of a new guide to phone service and equipment. It's called The Phone Book, and it's published by Consumer Reports. Let's start with the area that confuses me the most, long-distance service.
Well, in the area of long-distance service, I think a lot of people wonder whether it's worth their time and their trouble to even bother to compare the different long-distance companies. The fact is that if all you cared about was price, and if you only made $20 or $30 or $40 worth of long-distance calls every month, it's probably not worth your trouble to try to do better on price. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be thinking about which carrier you're using, and that's because some carriers have better connections than others. And I'm hoping that during this program we'll have a chance to talk about ways that you can compare one carrier to the next without having to sign up for them.
You suggested that if you make under, what, about $40 a month of long-distance phone calls, it's not worth switching to one of the newer companies to save money. What are the other reasons to switch? Sound quality?
It's important to know that at all times you can use any of half a dozen different long-distance carriers. This is in part because one of them may have better sound quality than the next. It is also very important because sometimes you could get a situation where your calls just don't go through. A couple of years ago, for example, there was the earthquake in San Francisco. Everybody, of course, was on the telephones calling up their friends and relatives in the Bay Area trying to find out if they were okay. Most people were signed up for AT&T or MCI or Sprint, and none of them were able to get through. But all these people could have used any of several other long-distance carriers, including ITT. I happened to try using ITT that day, and I got through with no trouble at all. You do this by using five-digit access codes, five-digit codes that allow you to use any long-distance carrier you want at a moment's notice. You don't have to sign up for them in advance, and then you can get through if one of the other ones is busy, and you can find out for yourself which ones have good phone connections.
Now, how does that work? You have to know this this five-digit access code. Is there a standard code, or is there a different one for every city?
Well, thank goodness the numbers that I'm about to describe work the same all across the country. Suppose you dial a long-distance call, and you get a bad connection.
Mm-hmm.
What you did, of course, you dialed one in the area code and the telephone number. And if you got a bad connection, and if you do what most of us, I think, have always done out of habit, you hang up the phone, you pick it up, and you dial exactly the same thing again. That's exactly the wrong thing to do. If you get a bad connection, hang up the phone, pick it up, and dial one of these five-digit prefixes. 10222 is MCI, 10288 is AT&T, 10333 is U.S. Sprint, 10488 is ITT, 10444 is AllNet. You dial one of those five-digit prefixes, and then you dial one in the area code and the telephone number, and suddenly your call will go through on completely different circuits on a different long-distance carrier. And if your first connection was a bad one, the second one is unlikely to be a bad connection because you're not even using the same facilities to make the call.
Now, I'm going to suggest to our listeners that they get a pencil because I'm going to ask you to give those numbers again in a second. But let's explain this a little more. With this access code, you can make one phone call on MCI or Sprint or ITT and test it either for sound quality or use it to get access to a line that you can't get through on the carrier that you have.
That's exactly right. And another example of how these can be handy is if you're making an overseas call. It happens pretty often, depending on which overseas country you might be calling, that you can't get through because all the circuits to that country are busy. And of course, what this means is all the circuits to that country allocated to your primary carrier are busy. But if you use one of these five-digit prefixes, your call could go through and perhaps get through because there are lines available to one of the other long-distance carriers.
Is there a special charge if you use it?
The amount that you'll pay, you'll get a bill eventually for all these calls. This is not something that gives you free calls. The amount you'll pay will be about the same as what you would have paid if you had switched over to that carrier in the first place. And these prices tend to be quite consistent with the prices you're used to in any event.
Okay, I think our listeners have their pencils now. Let me ask you to give those five-digit codes again.
That's right. Here they are in no particular order. U.S. Sprint is 10333. MCI is 10222. ITT is 10488. AllNet is 10444. And AT&T is 10288.
So you dial that and then one in your area code?
You dial that and then whatever else it is that you were going to dial. For a domestic long-distance call, you would dial 1 in the area code and the phone number after the 5-digit prefix. For an international call, you would dial 011 and the number after the 5-digit prefix.
Now, let's get back to rates. Everybody's very confused about rates. At what point, if you have AT&T, at what point does it make sense to look to the other plans to save money?
Well, if you make a lot of calls to a particular foreign country, or if your monthly bill is regularly over perhaps $50 or $60 a month, or if you make a lot of calls to a particular city or state within the U.S. over, say, $50 or so, you would be smart to call up each of the carriers one by one and ask them what special program they have, because each of the carriers, AT&T, MCI, Sprint, for example, have special programs that that might save you money.
Are they all discounted at about the same? I mean, is one any more obviously cheaper than the other?
Well, as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, MCI and Sprint, for example, were always a lot cheaper than AT&T. AT&T has been cutting its rates pretty consistently so that by now it is almost down to the levels of those other carriers. So if you just took any single phone call and tried to compare rates, you wouldn't see an enormous striking difference amongst the several carriers.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Carl Opedal, and he's the chief author of a new Consumer Reports book called The Phone Book, and it's about telephone equipment and telephone service. A lot of people have been buying telephones now instead of renting them from the phone company. What do you think are the relative advantages to buying or renting?
It is, as recently as 10 years ago, almost everyone rented all their phones from their local phone company. Today, I like to think that everybody simply uses phones that they have purchased. But what's really remarkable is that in the state of New York, for example, fully 1/8 of all the telephone customers in the state continue to rent their phones now from AT&T, since after the breakup, they came to be the owners of those phones. I think the smart consumer will do everything it takes to make sure that all the telephones in the house or in the office are the kind that can be unplugged easily rather than the kind that are connected straight into the wall. And any phones that are being rented, the consumer ought to buy those phones, buy them from AT&T or give them back to AT&T and buy other phones. It's not smart consumerism to continue renting any telephones.
Why not?
It just doesn't make sense in terms of money. The cost to rent telephones is so much that you could buy phones and throw them away every year and still spend less money than if you keep renting them.
You know, I still think, though, that those old AT&T rotary telephones have the best sound.
There is no question that the telephones that many of us knew when we were little kids, phones that came from the phone company and said Western Electric on them, were sturdy and still are sturdy right now. There's no question about that. And if you have a phone that's been giving you good service, buy it from AT&T, but don't keep renting it.
Is there any advantage in buying telephones with the phone company logos on them? Or are they going to be any better sound quality than to buy, you know, another brand name?
I think the thing to do there is to really give very little significance to a telephone company logo on the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these purchases are for a relatively small amount of money, $20 or $30 or $40. And, you know, if you're buying a toaster or something, I don't think you'd pay extra for a toaster that came from your electric company. I think the thing to do is, you know, if you have a phone that a friend of yours has used and it served them well, maybe buy that kind of phone. Read Consumer Reports magazine, for example, and get ratings of telephones. But I would not particularly give emphasis to a telephone company name on the telephone.
Yeah, I asked that because since the old telephone company phones have such good sound quality, I wanted to know if we should expect that from the phones that are being marketed with the phone company logos on them.
Well, even the phones that you'd get from AT&T, they're not really made the same way that those old reliable phones were made. Different manufacturing processes are used and different construction techniques, so it wouldn't be fair to hold them up to the same expectation.
Now, if you're going from a rotary phone to a touch tone phone, do you have to get the phone company to make a conversion for you?
Well, yes, you're right to be asking that. If you get a telephone with push buttons on it, it'll probably have a little switch that allows you to select between tone and pulse. And if it's in the pulse position, those buttons will do the same thing that a rotary telephone would have done. And that can be plugged in the same place where a rotary phone could be, and you don't have to make any special arrangement with your phone company. But if you flip the switch over to the tone position so that that telephone is producing tones, you should try plugging it in, and if it works, that's fine. But if it doesn't work, it probably is because your local telephone company would have to be supplying what's called touch-tone line treatment on your telephone line. I've been an advocate for years that that is not something that should be costing extra. It turns out it's actually bad for the telephone network for everybody to be using rotary because they tie up the circuits more when they're first dialing the call. I published an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal a few years ago, which I like to think may have influenced the changes in Oregon and Utah and California to make touch-tone something that does not cost extra. And I hope eventually it'll be that way across the country.
When we say cost extra, do we mean a couple of dollars or more than that?
Well, it varies greatly from state to state. But in New York, for example, touch-tone is more than a dollar a month. And I don't think it should be that way.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about cordless telephones. If you're going to buy one, you'll notice that there's one channel, there's multi-channel. What's the difference?
Well, the cordless telephones that are now commonly available in stores are phones that will be marked with a particular numerical designation. They will say 4649, which is a way of saying that the frequencies the cordless phones use are 46 megahertz and 49 megahertz. There are 10 channels available in that area for cordless use. Not every cordless phone uses all 10 channels. Some only use one channel, some use two channels. If you're in an area that is very crowded, an urban area, for example, I think it would be smart to get the kind of phone that can use any of the 10 channels. And in fact, there are some cordless phones that automatically scan through all 10 channels every time you pick them up to find out which ones are not in use. If, on the other hand, you're in a rural area, an area that's not so crowded, you might find that you wouldn't get any interference from your neighbors no matter which channel you use.
If you live in an apartment building where your radio and TV reception isn't very good, are you likely to get bad reception on a cordless phone as well?
No. In fact, in an odd way, you're likely to be happier with the results. The walls of the building that make it hard for you to pick up the radio and the television are also going to make it more difficult for your neighbor's cordless phone to interfere with yours. So in an odd way, you might actually be better off.
Now, you recommend that if you're only going to have one phone in your house, it should not be a cordless phone.
Well, that's right. Most cordless phones have to be plugged into the wall to function. And imagine the situation where you have a loss of electric power, perhaps due to a storm or some sort of natural disaster. It would be a pity if that meant that your cordless phone didn't work anymore. Next thing you know, you can't make any phone calls. I would say at least one phone in the house should be the kind of phone that does not have to be plugged into the wall.
About how much do you have to spend to buy a cordless phone that will actually sound good?
That's a very tough question, and it depends how many people who are physically nearby to you are likely to be using cordless phones, because they're going to interfere with your ability to get a good connection. There is no substitute for buying it and bringing it home and trying it in the place where you plan to use it, and I sure hope the place where you bought it is the kind of place that would let you exchange it if you weren't happy with the results.
That's a good thing to inquire about before you pay.
That's right.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guest is Carl Opedal. He's the chief author of a new Consumer Reports book about buying phones, about phone systems, and the book is called The Phone Book. More about phones after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Carl Opedal, author of the new book, The Phone Book, How to Get the Telephone Equipment and Service You Want, and it's published by Consumer Reports. Let me ask you about cellular phones. More and more people seem to be buying them or thinking about them. Are the prices coming down?
Prices are certainly coming down. I think you'll find if you open up a newspaper or listen to an advertisement, you'll find that there are two prices. And the price that's advertised is a price that assumes you're signing up for service. And then there's a much higher price you'd have to pay if you just wanted to buy it and stick it in a box and never use it. This difference in price comes from a sales commission that a cellular carrier is going to pay to that store in return for their signing you up for that company's service. And those commissions continue to be very high, typically $300. And the actual cost of the hardware is coming way down. A car phone these days can often be had for as little as $100, and a nice handheld cellular telephone, a so-called portable phone, can easily be gotten for $300 or $400.
So the main problem isn't so much the phone as it is the billing.
Well, I think most customers haven't the faintest idea until after they start getting the bills what they're in for. One problem, of course, is that the bills, you tend to spend a lot of money on a cellular telephone. $100 a month or more is a typical bill. But I think one of the things that most of our listeners probably don't realize is that it's important to be smart about which of the two cellular carriers in your city you would be connected to. Each city that has cellular service has two carriers, and each carrier makes its own decisions about where to put the antennas that will make connections with your cellular phone. And it's possible to imagine that depending on where you live, where you work, where you go when you're using the cellular phone, one carrier or the other might happen to be better situated to give you service. Now, there's no way you could ever know this by consulting the salesperson at the store where you buy the phone. And you couldn't even tell it by looking at maps that show where they claim to have coverage. The only way to do it is to try both carriers. And now I'm going to say something that sounds like bad news but is actually good news. What I'm going to recommend is that anybody who gets a new cellular phone, whether it's a car phone or a handheld portable cellular phone, should simply sign up for both carriers in the city they're in. This costs a certain amount of money. You have to pay a subscription fee for each of those carriers for the couple of months that you would do the testing I'm about to describe. But if you do this, and these phones all have a little switch that allows them to go back and forth between two carriers or more, if you try it out, you'll find out, perhaps, that one of the carriers often has circuits busy because everybody's trying to make a call at the same time you are. Maybe the other one does not have circuits that are busy. Or maybe one of them has better connections than another. Or one of them has places where they can't even provide service because of where they chose to put their antennas. And after a month or so of comparing the two, you could find out which one actually serves you best and then drop the other one. That sounds like bad news because you're paying subscription fees to two companies. But it's actually good news because if you make clear to the store where you're buying this that you're going to sign up for two carriers, they will get two sales commissions and they will be able to drop their price to you, taking into account both commissions. With a car phone, you could probably get it free. And with a handheld portable, you could probably knock off at least an extra $100 in the price of the telephone.
So if you're going to do that, you should walk into the store prepared to negotiate.
Walk into the store, explain to them that you're going to want both carriers for some period of time, and ask them what they can do in terms of giving you the benefit of the two sales commissions.
I found out from your book that you actually pay to have an unlisted number. I didn't realize you get charged for that.
Well, it varies from one state to the next because each phone company in every state is regulated by a different state regulator, and the regulators vary from one to the next in how they handle these things. But generally speaking, having a number that's not printed in the phone book or having a number that does not is not made available through directory assistance does cost extra. But what usually does not cost extra, and for some people this would be just as good, is that many phone companies will leave out the address for your listing out of the phone book at no charge. And I think for a lot of people, if you think about what it is that you're trying to avoid, concern about privacy, for example, just leaving out the address is sometimes all you really wanted, and that's free usually.
If you're just joining us, Carl Opedal is my guest, author of the new book, The Phone Book, published by Consumer Reports. I'm sure a lot of our listeners spend a fair amount of time in hotels and know how expensive it is to call out from a hotel. I mean, in cities, you usually get charged a minimum of 75 cents, often a dollar or more, just to make that call. That's not even, I mean, that's just for making the call. That's not even the charge for the amount of time you're on the phone. And there's often, you know, a hotel surcharge per minute for the amount of time that you call. Are there ways of circumventing the hotel surcharges?
I think with hotel telephones and also with privately owned public telephones, there is a great potential for customers to get burned, getting charged a lot more than they expected for long-distance calls, as you correctly point out. In the case of hotels, there are a couple of things that you can consider. One is if you use a calling card from Sprint or MCI, those calling cards have a way that you can make a call that starts by dialing an 800 number, and after that, then you dial some other digits. And in some hotels, the 800 numbers don't have surcharges. So if you're in one of those hotels, that provides a very good way to make long-distance calls and not get burned. Some hotels, it annoys me every time I have it happen to me, still charge a lot of money even for an 800 number call, which is ridiculous because it costs them nothing to put through that call. But if you're in one of those hotels, sometimes I've gotten to where I just go down to the lobby and use the payphone in the lobby just to avoid having to pay what is sometimes an exorbitant surcharge even for the 800 number that starts the calling card process.
The number of pages in our phone bills have just skyrocketed recently. And I don't know, I feel like to really be a good consumer here would take like half of your life. So looking at local charges for a second, do you have any advice for us about how to figure out how to interpret the local part of the phone bill and if there's often special plans we should be considering?
With the local part of your telephone bill, one of the things you need to do is make sure that you understand each of the charges that makes up the standard monthly service charge. And you may may have to call your local business office to get them to explain the charges one by one. Figure out which ones are optional and which ones can be left off. And that's one of the first steps you should follow. It varies greatly from one state to the next in terms of what your options are. For some people, for example, if you make a lot of local calls, it might make sense to pay extra for a plan where local calls are not charged extra. But in some places, that's not available. In some places, the only way you can sign up is with a plan where every local call costs money.
One last thing. This is just a handy bit of information. I think we've all been in the situation where we desperately needed somebody's unlisted number and we couldn't get it. And there's actually a way to get it if you really need it.
That's right. Every directory assistance office, and they don't publicize this, of course, because otherwise they'd get far more business than they can handle. Every directory assistance office always has a bureau that handles inquiries about unlisted numbers. If you call directory assistance and if you have a genuine emergency, you should only do this if it's a genuine emergency, you explain this to them, and they won't give you the person's number. That'll never happen. But they will offer to take down a message from you and pass it along to the subscriber. Now, this is only available if you got your unlisted number by paying for it. A lot of people who want to have what they consider to be the privacy benefits of an unlisted number will try to get it by simply subscribing under a made-up name, a fictitious name. If they do that, obviously this unlisted bureau is not going to be any help to them.
Carl Obadala is the editor of The Phone Book, published by Consumer Reports. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.